Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
Excuse me, do you know where Paddy Dignam is buried?
You
can't. Patrick Dignam.
Dignam, yeah. That was Mr. Dignam, my father.
Paddy Dignam.
Paddy Dignam, dead.
Excuse me,
Patrick Dignam.
Paddy Dignam,
laid in clay.
Paddy Dignam.
I am Paddy Dignam, spirit. List.
Mr. Patrick Dignam.
Dignam, Patrick T, deceased.
Paddy Dignam.
Paddy Dignam, in the grave.
This is the fruits of Mr. Paddy Dignam.
Dignam's dead and gone.
And mournful, and with her heavy heart, he bewept the extinction of that beam of heaven.
Vere Dignam et justum est.
With unfeigned regret it is we announce the dissolution of a most respected Dublin burgess.
This morning the remains of the late Mr. Patrick Dignam.
We've come to the necropolis of Dublin, Prospect or Glasnevin Cemetery, where I'm comfortably seated on, I don't know whose grave it is anyway, but it's quite comfortable. I can see the front gate and the chapel is behind me. So I know exactly where Dignam's funeral came and where it went.
How was Willie Murray those times, Alf?
I don't know,
says Alf.
I saw him just now on Cable Street with Paddy Dignam. Only I was running after that.
You what?
Says Joe, throwing down the letters.
With who?
With Dignam,
says Alf.
Is it Paddy?
Says Joe.
Yes,
says Alf.
Why?
Don't you know he's dead?
Says Joe.
Paddy Dignam dead?
Says Alf.
Aye,
says Joe.
Sure, I'm after seeing him not 5 minutes ago,
says Alf.
As plain as a pikestaff.
Who's dead? Says Bob Jordan.
You saw his ghost then,
says Joe.
Got between us and ham.
What?
Says Alf.
Good Christ, only 5. What? And Willie Murray with them. The two of them there near, what do you call him's? What? Dignam dead.
What about Dignam? Says Bob Jordan.
Who's talking about
dead?
Says Alf.
He is no more dead than you are.
Maybe so,
says Joe.
They took the liberty of burying him this morning anyhow.
Paddy,
says Alf.
Aye,
says Joe.
He paid the debt of nature. God be merciful to him.
Good Christ,
says Alf. Begob, he was what you might call flabbergasted.
Good Christ,
says he.
I could have sworn it was him.
And says Bob Jordan, with the hat on the back of his pole, lowest blackguard in Dublin when he's under the influence.
Who said Christ is good?
I beg your parsnips,
says Alf.
Is that a good Christ?
Says Bob Jordan.
To take away poor little Willie Dignam?
Ah, well,
says Alf, trying to pass it off.
He's over all his troubles.
But Bob Jordan shouts out of him.
He's a bloody ruffian, I say. To take away poor little Willie Dignam.
Terry came down and tipped him the wink to keep quiet, that they didn't want that kind of talk in a respectable licensed premises. And Bob Jordan starts doing the weeps about Paddy Dignam. True as you're there.
The finest man,
says he, snivelling.
The finest, purest character.
The tear is bloody near your eye, talking through his bloody hat.
So today is Bloomsday at Glasnevin Cemetery. And what we have at the moment is a staging of the Hades chapter of Ulysses, and we have a number of actors who are playing out the events as Joyce wrote them on that day in 1904.
What's wrong now?
A divided drove of branded cattle past the windows, lowing, slouching by on padded hoofs, whisking their tails slowly on their clotted bony croups. Outside them and through them ran rattled sheep, bleating their fear.
Emigrants.
The drover's voice cried, his switch sounding on their flanks. Woo! Out of that!
Yeah, we've just done an adaptation of the funeral of Paddy Dignam, which is a funeral event that really is an entire chapter of Ulysses. Chapter 6 is devoted to the funeral of Paddy Dignam. And the other thing is that poor Paddy died 3 days before Bloomsday, and yet we know more about him probably than many of the other characters and minor characters in the piece. And it sort of threads away the funeral that these people attend, these very characters. They appear in various other episodes throughout the day, and they often mention the morning's events and the funeral of Paddy Dignam.
You're in black, I see.
Going to crop up all day, I foresee. Who's dead, when, and what did he die of? Turn up like a bad penny.
Oh, dear me. I hope it wasn't any near relation.
May as well get her sympathy. Dignam, an old friend of mine. He died quite suddenly, poor fellow. Heart trouble, I believe. Funeral was this morning.
Sad to lose the old friends.
Mrs. Breen's woman eyes said melancholily.
Now, that's quite enough about that. Just quietly. Husband. And your lord and master?
Mrs. Breen turned up two large eyes.
Hasn't lost them, anyhow.
Oh, don't be talking. He's a caution to rattlesnakes. He's in there now with his law books, finding out the law libel. He has me heart scalded.
We have four rehearsals for this.
Yeah.
I didn't look that way. But
the minimum rehearsal, mind you, in front rooms, back rooms.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Anywhere we could find.
Upstairs in a pub type of thing. It's not really located in anyone.
Yeah.
Well, you see, we do it every year, so it's like putting on an old coat, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I remember Joyce being introduced onto the UCD reading list, so I go back that far if you want to go. And one of the things I like about Joyce is he has come up with a character that has now almost become the patron saint of Dublin with the feast day every year, and he's a fictional Jew, and I love the whole twist of that.
And I belong to a race, too, that is hated and persecuted, robbed, plundered, insulted, persecuted, taking what belongs to us by right, at this very moment, sold by auction off in Morocco like slaves or cattle.
Are you talking about the New Jerusalem?
I'm talking about injustice.
But big up, I was just lowering the heel of the point when I saw the citizen getting up to waddle to the door, puffing and blowing with the dropsy, and he cursing the curse of Cromwell and bell, book and candle in Irish, spitting and spatting out of him, and Joe and little Alf round him like a leprechaun trying to pacify him.
Let me alone,
says he.
Mendelssohn was a Jew, and Karl Marx and Mercadante and Spinoza, and the Saviour was a Jew, and his father was a Jew, your God.
He had no father, that'll do now.
Whose God? Well, his uncle was a Jew. Your God was a Jew. Christ was a Jew like me.
Cub, the citizen made a plunge back into the shop.
By Jesus,
says he,
I'll brain that bloody Jew man for using the holy name. By Jesus, I'll crucify him, so I will.
Ara, sit down on the parliamentary side of your arse, for Christ's sake, and don't be making a public exhibition of yourself. Jesus, there's always some bloody clown or other kicking up a bloody murder about bloody nothing. God, but it turned the porter sour in your guts, so it would.
My name is Daniel, and I'm a tour guide here with the Dublin Cemeteries Trust based in Glasnevin Cemetery. The cemetery was established in 1832, is a very historical site, and of course, famously has its links to Hades, Chapter 6. Joyce immediately, as you can tell by his reflections in Hades, was struck by some of the monuments that he noticed as he walked in the front gate. Your eye is first of all drawn, well, I suppose before you even get in the front gate, your eye is drawn to the round tower.
The O'Connell Circle,
Mr. Dedalus said about him.
The round tower, being the tallest one in the country, was built in 1855 as a headstone for the liberator Daniel O'Connell. That taking 16 months to build, was finished by about 1856, so not long after the cemetery's gates moved up to here. It cost at the time about £18,000, you're looking at about €20 million in today's money to build that headstone for Daniel O'Connell. Again, you would see all of this reflected in Hades as the funeral arrives here.
Mr. Power's soft eyes went up to the apex of the lofty cone.
He's at rest in the middle of his people, old Dano. But his heart is buried in Rome.
Well, his final wishes were supposedly send my body to Ireland, my heart to Rome and my soul to heaven. A nice few words before he died. But he was taken very literal, and his heart removed, sent to the Irish College in Rome. And it was housed there until 1927, but has since been stolen and has never been found since then.
How many broken hearts are buried here, Simon?
It was stolen from the Church of St. Agatha, which was attached to the Irish College at the time. And in the mid-1920s, the church was undergoing restoration. I believe there was a change of ownership of some sort with the Bank of Italy. And somewhere in the transition, it was discovered that while the plaque that stated his heart was buried there still existed, The actual heart in the silver casket was long gone and has never been found since then.
That's an awfully good one that's going the rounds about Reuben Jay and the son.
About the bolt, man.
Yes, isn't it awfully good?
What is that? I didn't hear it.
There was a girl in the case, and he determined to send him to the Isle of Man out of harm's way. But when they were both...
What? That confirmed bloody hobbledehoy, is it?
Yes, they were both on the way to the boat, and he tried to drown.
Drown, Barabbas. I wish to Christ he did.
Mr. Power sent a long laugh down his shaded nostrils.
No, the son himself.
Martin Cunningham thwarted his speech rudely.
Reuben Jay and the son were piking it down the quay next to the river on their way to the Isle of Man boat, and the young chiseler suddenly got loose and over the wall with him into the Liffey.
For God's sake, is he dead?
Dead? Not he. A boatman got a pole and fished him out by the slack of the breeches, and he was landed up to the father on the quay, more dead than alive. Half the town was there.
Yes, but the funny part is...
And Reuben Jay gave the boatman a florin for saving his son's life.
A stifled sigh came from under Mr. Power's hand.
Oh, he did, like a hero, a silver florin.
Isn't it awfully good?
1 and 8 pence, too much,
Mr. Dedalus said dryly. Mr. Power's choked laugh burst quietly in the carriage.
Why is he there at all?
Yeah, I just wonder. I mean, why?
I mean, he doesn't know anyone very well. Mm-hmm. No one calls him by his first name. This is the obvious thing in the carriage. Everyone is Jack and Martin mm-hmm. and Simon mm-hmm. and Bloom. I was surprised about this episode because... It didn't sound like an Irish funeral to me. Insofar as it went, it was. But the body of Patrick Dignam was not brought to the church. There was no funeral mass. And there were no women at the funeral. And it was a paltry funeral.
It was a small, shabby funeral.
Right? Yes, I mean, 12 people at it. I mean, mm-hmm. that was it.
Paltry funeral. Coach and 3 carriages. It's all the same. Pallbearers, gold reins, requiem mass, firing a volley, pomp of death.
And while they all profess to have great sympathy for the widow and the 5 children I think that Big Dignam had, when Simon Dedalus is told there's going to be a whip around to, for, mm-hmm. to tide the widow and the children over for the moment, he says, yes.
Mr. Dedalus said dubiously.
Is that the eldest boy in front?
Yes, with the wife's brother. John Henry Menton is behind. He put down his name for a quid.
I'll engage he did. I often told poor Paddy he ought to mind that job. John Henry's not the worst in the world.
How did he lose it? Liquor, what?
Many a good man's fault,
Mr. Dedalus said with a sigh.
But doesn't put his hand in his pocket. But we hear that Bloom put his name down for 5 shillings, which he could ill afford. And later we hear, not alone put his name down for it, but actually gave it over, paid the money, which seems to be an unusual thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Worth comment, huh? Yep.
Yes, mm-hmm. it was. Yep. So here he is, the one person who seems to be at the funeral for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. Was he insured?
Mr. Bloom asked.
I believe so.
Mr. Kernan answered.
But the policy was heavily mortgaged. Martin is trying to get the youngster into our town.
How many children did he leave?
5. Ned Lambert says he'll try to get one of the girdles into Todd's.
A sad case.
Mr. Bloom said gently.
5 young children.
A great blow to the poor wife.
Mr. Kernan added.
Indeed, yes.
Mr. Bloom agreed.
So we're going to take a walk down now, as I say, towards the grave of Matthew F. Cain. And as I say, we're not going to be making any stops along the way. But of course, you can feel free to ask me questions as we go along as well. Let's get moving. So we're going to head straight on down, as I say. Everyone, of course, always asking, where is Paddy Dignam buried? Now, it is really the furthest grave, one of the furthest graves away. We pass by a Dignam grave here. Not quite Paddy Dignam, but... You will find names of almost every family in Dublin scattered throughout this cemetery as you walk by.
Excuse me, could you tell me where Paddy Dignam was buried?
Sorry there, could you tell me where Paddy Dignam was buried?
Can you tell me where Paddy Dignam is buried?
Paddy Dignam is allegedly buried a little bit further down in the cemetery in what is the St. Bridget section. And if you follow the story of the funeral, you can see where it comes into the mortuary chapel, comes out, passes quite close to the family grave of James Joyce, and then down into the cemetery and that location. And there are a lot of connections between that particular grave and Joyce, naturally.
Obviously, death is the theme. It's a funeral. They talk about all kinds of death.
Drowning, they say, is the pleasantest. See your whole life in a flash. but being brought back to life, no. Can't bury in the air, however, out of a flying machine. Wonder, does the news go about whenever a fresh one is let down? Underground communication. We learned that from them.
There's disease, there's suicide, there's murder. It's also in the metaphors and things like that. The language is coloured by death. I was in mortal agony, somebody says in exaggeration. So there's a lot of words that suggest death.
I was in mortal agony with you talking of suicide before Bloom.
What?
Mr. Power whispers.
How so?
His father poisoned himself. Had the Queen's Hotel in Ennis. You heard him say he was going to Clare. Anniversary.
And at a certain point, someone says the worst death is suicide, and not knowing that Bloom's father committed suicide. And then it's again Mr. Cunningham who says, well, it's not for us to judge and all of that.
But the worst of all is the man who takes his own life.
Martin Cunningham drew out his watch briskly, coughed and put it back.
The greatest disgrace to have in the family.
Mr. Power added.
Temporary insanity, of course.
Martin Cunningham said decisively.
We must take a charitable view of it.
They say a man who does it is a coward.
Mr. Dedalus said.
It's not for us to judge.
Martin Cunningham said. Mr. Bloom, about to speak, closed his lips again.
That afternoon of the inquest, the red-labelled bottle on the table, the room in the hotel with hunting pictures, stuffy it was, sunlight through the slats of the Venetian blinds, the coroner's ears, big and hairy, boots giving evidence, thought he was asleep first, then saw like yellow streaks on his face. It slipped down to the foot of the bed. Verdict, overdose, death by misadventure. The letter for my son Leopold. No more pain. Wake no more. Nobody owns.
Bloom thinks about death, what should be put on a gravestone.
More interesting if they told you what they were. So-and-so, wheelwright. I travelled for Cork Lino. I paid 5 shillings in the pound. Or a woman's with her saucepan. I cooked good Irish stew.
He also thinks, what the whole funeral, the whole cemetery, it must be awful. I mean, here we have these graves, right? Underneath you have decaying bodies and you have maggots and God knows what. He sees a rat and all of that. His view of the cemetery is rather undignified.
I dare say the soil would be quite fat with corpse manure, bones, flesh, nails, charnel houses. The botanic gardens are just over there. It's the blood sinking in the earth gives new life. Every man his price. Well-preserved fat corpse, gentleman, epicure, invaluable for fruit garden. A bargain. By carcass of William Wilkinson, auditor and accountant, lately deceased, £3.13 and 6, with thanks.
He's often sort of turning things upside down. Mr. Kernan, who is given to pompous phrases when they walk out, says,
the service of the Irish church used in Mount Jerome is simpler, more impressive, I must say.
Mr. Bloom gave prudent assent.
The language, of course, was another thing.
Mr. Kernan said with solemnity,
I am the resurrection and the life.
Which seems to be part of the Protestant service and not the Catholic one, and that touches your inmost heart. And in Luther, yeah, your heart perhaps, but what's the good of the man under the soil? And
your heart, perhaps. But what price the fellow in the 6 feet by 2 with his toes to the daisies? No touching that.
And he thinks the heart is not so much the seat of the affection and this kind of metaphorical stuff.
Broken heart. A pump, after all, pumping thousands of gallons of blood every day. One fine day it gets bunged up and there you are. Lots of them lying around here. Lungs, hearts, livers. Old rusty pumps, damn the thing else. The resurrection and the life. Once you are dead, you are dead.
With the idea of the last day, the judgment. Does everybody come with their own bodies? And so there's a lot of underground humour there.
That last day idea, knocking them all up out of their graves. Come forth, Lazarus. And he came fifth and lost the job. Get up, last day. And every fellow mousing around for his liver and his lights and the rest of his traps. Fine damn all of himself that morning.
So to change the subject, he read about Dignam, R.I.P., which he reflected was anything but a gay send-off.
This morning, the remains of the late Mr. Patrick Dignam were removed from his residence, number 9, Newbridge Avenue, Sandymount, for interment in Glasnevin. The deceased gentleman
was a most popular and genial personality in city life, and his demise after a brief illness came as a great shock to citizens of all...
If he was alive all the time, who by jingo, that would be awful. They ought to have some law to pierce the heart and make sure, or an electric clock or a telephone in the coffin and some kind of a canvas air hole, flag of distress. No, no, he is dead, of course. Of course he is dead. Monday he died.
It is true. It was my funeral. Dr. Finucane pronounced life extinct when I succumbed to the disease from natural causes.
He lifts his mutilated, ashen face moonwards and bays lugubriously. Bloom in triumph.
You hear?
Bloom, I am Paddy Dignam's spirit. List, list, oh list.
The voice is the voice of Esau.
Second watch blesses himself.
How is that possible?
First watch.
It is not in the Penny Catechism.
By metempsychosis. Spooks.
Oh, rocks.
Paddy Dignam, earnestly.
Once I was in the employ of Mr. J.H. Menton, solicitor, commissioner for oaths and affidavits of 27 Bachelor's Walk. Now I am defunct. The wall of the heart hypertrophied. Hard lines. The poor wife was awfully cut up. How is she bearing it? Keep her off that bottle of sherry.
He looks round him.
A lamp. I must satisfy an animal need. That buttermilk didn't agree with me.
The portly figure of John O'Connell, caretaker, stands forth, holding a bunch of keys tied with crepe. Beside him stands Father Cuffy, chaplain, toad-bellied, wry-necked, in a surplice and bandana nightcap, holding sleepily a staff of twisted poppies. Father Cuffy yawns, then chants with a hoarse croak.
Namile, Jacob's war biscuits, salmon.
John O'Connell, foghorn stormily through his megaphone.
Dignam, Patrick T, deceased.
Paddy Dignam, with pricked up ears, winces.
Overtones.
He wriggles forward, places an ear to the ground.
My master's voice.
John O'Connell.
Burial docket, letter number UP, 85,000, field 17, house of keys, plot 101.
Paddy Dignam listens with visible effort, thinking, his tail stiff-pointed, his ears cocked.
Pray for the repose of his soul.
He worms down through a coal hole, his brown habit trailing its tether over rattling pebbles. After him toddles an obese grandfather rat and fungus turtle paws under a grey carapace. Dignam's voice, muffled, is heard baying underground.
Dignam's dead and gone.
So, Thursday, 16th June, Patrick Dignam laid in clay of an apoplexy.
And on the right-hand side, you'll see a little white marble stone just three rows in off the pathway. The headstone reads, "In loving memory of John Stanislaus Joyce of Cork, born on the 4th of July 1849, died 29th of December 1931, and of his wife Mary Jane of Dublin, born the 15th of May 1859, died on the 13th of August 1903. James Joyce himself purchased the grave for his mother, Mary Jane, in 1903. In the grave are also buried some of James's siblings, George, Eva, Mabel, Frederick, and also his brother John Augustine, but they are not mentioned on the headstone. It just bears the name of the mother and father. And it was always said that if James was to be reburied anywhere in Ireland, that it would be here in the family grave in Glasnevin Cemetery. On the bottom of the grave is also located a little temporary plaque erected for Bloomsday today, which has Mary Jane and John Stanislaus Joyce's name on there, James Joyce's parents and inspirations for Simon and Mary Dedalus.
Her grave is over there, Jack,
Mr. Dedalus said.
I'll soon be stretched beside her. Let him take me whenever he likes.
Breaking down, he began to weep to himself quietly, stumbling a little in his walk. Mr. Power took his arm.
She's better where she is,
he said kindly.
I suppose so,
Mr. Dedalus said with a weak gasp.
I suppose she is in heaven, if there is a heaven.
The writing is fading a little bit, but it's still quite legible. And it's not the worst, to be... I mean, it's not bad. It clearly has been cleaned at some point in recent years. It has a nice white marble front, but the back is a much darker limestone. Well, it's not even... It's the same stone, but it's just not been cleaned on the back. And so it must have been given that new front in more recent years. But it could do with a... Well, I suppose it's not the worst, but it could do with a little bit of work to it. So that's just the way of it. Not forget all this stuff. Only the family who bought the headstone, in this case James, who bought all of this, has the right to do anything to it. So we, as the cemetery's trust, we can't physically touch it or change it without permission from the Joyce family and from James's descendants, who would still own the grave today. And so whenever the grave does need work, it's entirely up to them to come in and do it.
By the way, there's another undercurrent that surfaces here. It was very strong in the Stephen chapters, and that is Shakespeare.
Gravediggers in Hamlet shows the profound knowledge of the human heart. Daren't joke about the dead for 2 years at least. De mortuis nil nisi prius.
Hamlet and a lot of references there. Stephen sees himself as a Hamlet figure. And here too, one thinks of Hamlet and the grave diggers, that there are humorous scenes in a tragedy. And of course, the same thing is true about the chapter. Mm.
Did you hear that one, he asked them, about Mulcahy from the Coombe?
I did not,
Martin Cunningham said. They bent their silk hats in concert, and Hines inclined his ear. The caretaker hung his thumbs in the loops of his gold watch chain and spoke in a discreet tone to their vacant smiles.
They tell the story,
he said,
that two drunks came out here one foggy evening to look for the grave of a friend of theirs. They asked for Mulcahy from the Coombe and were told where he was buried. After traipsing about in the fog, they found the grave sure enough. One of the drunks spelt out the name Terence Mulcahy. The other drunk was blinking up at a statue of our Saviour the widow had got put up.
The caretaker blinked up at one of the sepulchres they passed. He resumed.
And, after blinking up at the sacred figure, not a bloody bit like the man, says he. That's not Mulcahy, says he. Whoever done it?
200 different people who feature in some way, shape or form in Ulysses were actually buried here in the cemetery, and you can almost imagine Joyce really, I suppose, going up and down the headstones and seeing these names that he would recognise, very prominent figures in Dublin at the time, who are somewhat forgotten now but have been immortalised in Joyce's work.
The mourners moved away slowly, without aim, by devious paths, staying a while to read a name on a tomb.
Let us go round by the chief's grave,
Hines said.
We have time.
Let us,
Mr. Power said. They turned to the right, following their slow thoughts. With awe, Mr. Power's blank voice spoke.
Some say he's not in that grave at all, that the coffin was filled with stones, that one day he will come again.
Hines shook his head.
Ah, Nell will never come again. He's there, all that was mortal of him. Peace to his ashes.
So just across from the Joyce family grave, you have the grave of Charles Stuart Parnell, the uncrowned King of Ireland, a monumental political figure in Irish history in the second half of the 19th century. The Joyces were close friends with Parnell. John Stanislaus was an ardent political supporter of his, and Parnell's downfall in his political career after the affair with Catherine O'Shea in the late 1880s very much reflects the political downfall of John Stanislaus Joyce as well. Now, Parnell dies of pneumonia in October 1891, only 45 years old, and he was buried here in Glasnevin.
Foundation stone for Parnell. Breakdown. Heart.
A beautiful mound of Wicklow granite tops the grave itself, and beautiful black and gold railings surround the large mound that Parnell is buried beneath.
People talk about you a bit, forget you. Don't forget to pray for him. Remember him in your prayers. Even Parnell, Ivy Day dying out. Then they follow, dropping into a hole one after the other. We are praying now for the repose of his soul, hoping you're well and not in hell. Nice change of air out of the frying pan of life into the fire of purgatory.
Do they notice I'm in mourning? Uncle Barney said he'd get it into the paper tonight.
then they'll all see it in the paper and read my name printed in Pa's name. His face got all grey instead of being red like it was. And there was a fly walking over it up to his eye. The scrunch that was when they were screwing the screws into the coffin. And the bumps when they were bringing it downstairs. Pa was inside it. And Ma crying in the parlour. And Uncle Barney telling the men how to get it round the bend. A big coffin it was. And high and heavy looking. How was that? The last night Pa was boozed, he was standing on the landing there bawling out for his boots to go out to Tunney's for to booze more. And he looked butty and short in his shirt. Never see him again. Death, that is. Pa's dead. My father is dead. He told me to be a good son to Ma. I couldn't hear the other things he said, but I saw his tongue and his teeth trying to say it better. Poor Pa. That was Mr. Dignam, my father. I hope he's in purgatory now because he went to confession to Father Conroy on Saturday night.
As we near now the grave of Matthew F. Kane, you'll see a watchtower standing at the end of the path. These watchtowers were built in the mid-19th century to protect the cemetery from grave robbers and body snatchers. They were armed with men with rifles every evening, and packs of Cuban bloodhounds patrolled through the grounds to guard the cemetery itself. And you'll see the watchtowers built right in along the beautiful stone walls that run right the way around the perimeter of Glasnevin Cemetery as well.
Every mortal day a fresh batch. Middle-aged men, old women, children, women dead in childbirth, men with beards, bald-headed businessmen, consumptive girls with little sparrow's breasts. And even scraping up the earth at night with a lantern, like that case I read of, to get at fresh buried females, or even putrefied with running grave sores, give you the creeps after a bit.
Doctors in universities would employ body snatchers to dig up fresh bodies out of graves, and they'd sell them on for quite a handsome sum. And so it becomes a big problem in burial places right across Ireland. It was a huge fear for people in graveyards and cemeteries. Now, we're just here. So, it being Bloomsday today, the most appropriate place to stand in the cemetery is at the grave of Paddy Dignam. But as we stand at the grave, of course, the headstone does not bear the name Paddy Dignam at all, but rather the name Matthew F. Kane, 1865 to 1904, chief clerk in the chief crown solicitor's office, Dublin Castle, beloved friend of countless Dubliners and model in James Joyce's Ulysses for Paddy Dignam, Martin Cunningham, William Shakespeare, and his own name, Matthew F. Kane, died of accidental drowning in Dublin Bay.
Of what did bell chime and hand touch and footstep and lone chill remind him?
Of companions now in various manners in different places defunct. Percy Apjohn, killed in action, Modder River. Philip Gilligan, phthisis, Jervis Street Hospital. Matthew F. Kane, accidental drowning, Dublin Bay. Philip Moisel, pyaemia, Heytesbury Street. Michael Hart, phthisis, Mater Misericordiae Hospital. Patrick Dignam, apoplexy, Sandymount.
Today, for the day that's in it, there is also a small little plaque that's been left on the grave bearing a quote from Ulysses that has his name, reading, sympathetic human man he is, intelligent, like Shakespeare's face, always a good word to say. You'll find these little markers left on the graves of Joycean people in the cemetery itself. There are a number of others that have a Joycean connection. Just a few graves behind Matthew Kane, you have the grave of Dennis McGinney, who was a dance teacher. He ran a dance academy. He was from Tipperary. His name was Dennis McGinn. But when he set up his dance academy to make himself sound a bit more exotic, he added the I onto the end of his name to make it more sort of Italian sounding. And the academy he ran was on the corner of North Great George's Street, which is now where the Joyce Centre is located, just off Parnell Square in Dublin today.
Mr. Dennis J. McGinney, Professor of Dancing, etc., in silk hat, slate frock coat with silk facings, white kerchief tie, tight lavender trousers, canary gloves and pointed patent boots, walking with grave deportment, most respectfully took the curbstone as he passed Lady Maxwell at the corner of Dignam's Court.
You come along then further down on the way back towards the front entrance of the cemetery, you pass by the likes of Skin the Goat, who was the Jarvie driver for the Invincibles on the Phoenix Park murders in May 1882. He again features throughout much of Joyce's work.
Skin the Goat,
Mr. O'Madden Burke said.
Fitz Harris, he has that cabman shelter, they say, down there at Butbridge.
Robert Emmett was buried here by torchlight, wasn't he?
Actually, Robert Emmett is not buried here in Glasnevin Cemetery. Famously, he led the 1803 rebellion in Dublin and was executed out the front of St. Catherine's Church on Thomas Street. And 1803 is when that takes place. The cemetery here is not established until 1832. So this was just open fields and farmland at that time. It would be a real coincidence if Emmett was buried here. But I suppose it's because it's completely unknown where Robert Emmett is buried. Nobody has ever found his grave or his remains. And so perhaps just have him here in Glasnevin for argument's sake.
Enough of this place. Brings you a bit nearer every time. Last time I was here was Mrs. Sinico's funeral. Poor Papa, too. The love that kills. Life. Life.
You kiss me, can you
Red
tell me
face.
Why it's better
grey now.
Poor Paddy Dignam, all the same. I'm sorry in a way for him.
Mama. Poor Mama and little Rudy. Paddy Dignam shot out and rolling over stiff in the dust in a brown habit too large for him. The insides decompose quickly.
What are his wife and five children going to do unless he was insured?
The sphincter loose. Seal up all.
Mr. Patrick Dignam.
Over there towards Finglas, the plot I bought.
Can you tell me where Paddy Dignam is?
3 days. Rather long to keep them in summer. Just as well to get shot at them as soon as you're assured there's no...
Paddy Dignam in the grave.
Begin to be forgotten. Out of sight, out of mind.
And mournful, and with her heavy heart, he bewept the extinction of that beam of heaven.
That was Mr. Dignam, my father.
Vere Dignam et Justumis.
With unfeigned regret it is we announce the dissolution of a most respected Dublin burgess.
That was Excuse Me, Can You Tell Me Where Paddy Dignam Is Buried? And if you've been affected by anything you've heard in the programme, help is available at RTE Helplines. In tonight's Drama on One, Excuse Me, Can You Tell Me Where Paddy Dignam Is Buried? You heard the voices of Daniel Eglinton Carey and Connor Dodd from the Dublin Cemeteries Trust, and also Fritz Senn and Gerry O'Flaherty. The reenactment was performed by the Joyce Stagers, Peter Pryor, Louis O'Byrne, Paul Maher, Tim Casey, Ian Blackmore and Val O'Donnell. The excerpts from the 1982 RTE complete recording of James Joyce's Ulysses were performed by the RTE Players and full details are on the Drama on One website. Thanks to Jeff Maguire and Siobhan Lloyd and all the good-natured people at Glasnevin who participated in the programme. The music was Gabriel's Message, Cold Song and Hurdy Gurdy Man from the album If on a Winter's Night by Sting and also Penelope That Longed by William Byrd. Sound supervision was by Ruth Kennington. Excuse Me, Can You Tell Me Where Paddy Dignam Is Buried? Was produced by Kevin Reynolds.
Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.